what's the fellow that's our ambassador?
William Wilson?
Yeah. So.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what the film is like by the time it gets off the cutting boards, and Conspiracy is the name of it, and I guess, well, all of our listeners should keep their eyes peeled. And why don't you, in particular, caller, see if, you know, when you hear this film coming around, if for some reason it escapes us, why don't you put us all onto it, and we'll see whether it lives up to its billing.
Hey, it sounds like it's not going to be an obscure film that ends up playing in the specialty houses, Varsity and Bijou and things like that. It sounds like a $10 to $15 million production that will have the full marketing push behind it, the way Hollywood usually does. Some more fluffy subjects.
Alrighty, well, we'll keep our eyes peeled, and hopefully by the time the film comes out, we will have gotten our Radio Free America shows about the Vatican out, and that'll give people a little more background against which to weigh what the film has to present.
Perhaps we can get it to the producers as well. I don't know.
Well, but we'll see again.
One other question real quick.
Very quickly, because we do have another. We have more people on the line here. But so
please. I understand, Dave. There's regarding the subject matter that you've been covering in the prepared portion. I have a book in front of me. It's called Klaus Barbie and the United States Government, a report to the Attorney General of the United States. It's dated August of 1983. And I guess it's a report submitted by Alan A. Ryan, Jr., Special Assistant to the Assistant Attorney General.
Right.
Criminal Division, United States Department of Justice. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, basically, Alan Ryan he did what that article which talked about the GAO examining 114 aliens for possible Nazi connections did, which is to come up with a modified limited hangout and say, you know, well, it happened, but we don't know how. What Ryan said was that, yes, indeed, Klaus Barbie had worked for U.S. military intelligence following World War II, but that his was an isolated example and in no way representative. Well, as we know, his example was his case was only too typical. So Mr. Ryan, who I guess within the contemporary context has acquired something of a reputation as a Nazi hunter by virtue of his work with the Office of Special Investigations, Ryan wrote a book called, I believe it's called Quiet Neighbors, The Search for Nazi War Criminals in America, or I'm not sure about the subtitle, but Quiet Neighbors, I believe, is the title. And it, again, is pretty much of a modified limited hangout. It does not explain the real story, which is that we took in the Nazi Eastern Front intelligence apparatus with a lot of other people as well, and put together, you know, an organization with thousands of SS and Gestapo men, many of them notorious war criminals. But, you know, it represented the official version of the Barbie case, which is that, yes, Barbie worked for the intelligence community, but no, this was not typical. And that's what Ryan's information had to, that's what he presented.
Okay, one question. What unit of the Counterintelligence Corps did Henry Kissinger serve in?
970th Counterintelligence Corps, the same unit that debriefed Barbie.
For some reason, they're referring to the 430th CIC.
Well, Barbie was debriefed by 970th. I don't know about 430th. I know that Barbie had contacts with 970th, and that's what Kissinger worked for. So.
Yeah, I know Kissinger worked for that, and I've seen that in several bios, but here they state the 430th CIC. In Austria.
He may have worked with both. I don't know. The 430th is news to me.
The conclusion states that at the time that they were preparing this, I guess that it was a toss-up whether France would prosecute or the United States, and the preparer of this report recommended against prosecution because the statute of limitations had run out.
Right. Well,
he may have committed.
Again, I've indicated what the situation is with Alan Ryan. He's basically covering up all this material. So listen, caller, we have two other people on the line, and I've been on with you for about 10 minutes, so I'd like to move along if that's okay with you.
That's great. Good night.
All right. Good night now. San Jose.
Hello, Dave. This is Mr. Adequate.
How you doing?
Okay. I just finished a book yesterday called The Secret Surrender by Alan Dulles, published in 1966. Refers to the surrender of the Italian front, the German-Italian front, at the end of the war. That surrender being worked out with Carl Wolff, primarily, along with the German army. Wolf, of course, was SS, but he took the initiative and then talked some of his army mates into going along with it, according to Dulles. On page 229 of the book, Dulles refers to a little episode right at the end. Let's see, we're looking at about May 2nd or 3rd, roughly, wherein one of Dulles' proteges, a fellow named Gibernitz, was invited to visit the island of Capri, where a group of former prisoners of the Nazis had just arrived and were being held by the Allies pending clarification of their status. And among those prisoners was Hjalmar Schacht. So apparently Carl Wolff had something to do with Schacht's salvation, according to this account, that SS troops were sort of shepherding a couple of hundred prisoners, including Schacht, several of the participants in the July 20th conspiracy who had not yet been executed, and various others. The SS intention was to murder them all before the Allies could capture them. But according to this account, Wolf, through a friend of his in another regiment, or whatever it's called, was able to actually salvage these prisoners from this other SS group.
Well, yeah, the whole question of the July 20th bomb plot against Hitler, a lot of the information, I suspect, has been lost to an objective historical observer simply because there have been an awful lot of official lies. One of the interesting things, I personally think there's a lot more to be discovered about the handling of some of the people at the military level were dealt with very harshly, and that happened almost immediately. The people at, let's see what the word would be, the industrialists and aristocrats who gave the impetus to that plot, I personally think that it was by no means an accident that these people survived the war. I mean, Schacht had contacts with people like Alan Dulles throughout the war, and his connections, which had led him to be promoted to finance minister of the Third Reich, never dissolved. In other words, his position as a Third Reich minister was derivative of his relationships, and the relationships were the important part, and they continued throughout the war and after the war. And the thing about the July 20th conspiracy was that before July 20th, Hitler was essentially taking the approach of a German nationalist. He would not, at least according to the official record, consider serious negotiations with the various other Western allies. But after July 20th, official Third Reich policy became the formation of a more broad-based international fascist clique involving Britain and the United States, whereas this had been the desire of the SS conspirators under people like Schellenberg and Wolff, who, by the way, the book The Secret Surrender, also the book Operation Sunrise, talk about the negotiations for the surrender of SS and Axis forces in Italy. A briefer account of that is also offered in American Swastika by Charles Higham, which is currently available. But the point is that the policies with which many of the higher-ups, I guess you could say, in the July 20th conspiracy disagreed, then became the policies of the Third Reich, suggesting to me, anyway, that after July 20th, Hitler, who was very lucky to survive the July 20th bomb plot, essentially saw the writing on the wall and realized that his personal neck, as well as the salvation of Germany and the industrial and financial structure which produced Hitler in the first place, was dependent upon his adopting a more broad-based sort of international fascist approach rather than the more parochial approach which had gotten him into trouble with people like Hjalmar Schacht, people like Schellenberg, and some of the others who, again, were anti-Hitler but not anti-Nazi and sought a more palatable organization than Hitler's in order to form the international alliances, which in their view were paramount.
Well, certainly your analysis that Schacht was among the elite who survived seems to be borne out by a partial list of the people who were with him in this little prison camp, the former premier of France, the former chancellor of Austria, a nephew of Molotov, Prince Leopold of Prussia, a number of Protestant and Catholic churchmen. The list goes on and on. A little bit off the subject, I've just started reading a book called Berlin Diary by William Shirer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when it was first published. The issue I have seems to be a republishing. But I recommend it for anybody who wants to get a feel of the immediacy of the events leading to and in the first year of the World War in Europe. Simply put, it's just what Shirer felt but could not get published or get on the radio, simply because if he said these things at the time, he would have been booted out of Germany. It's a fascinating, very up-to-the-minute, immediate sort of an account. And I'm just eating it up. It's really a good book. And what it brought to mind was the proclamation that the Congress made the other day about what sort of event would prompt American servicemen to be deployed in Nicaragua. The idea that that they're essentially putting a pre-event rubber stamp on an American invasion, it just sounds like something right out of what Hitler was doing in the late 30s.
Well, again, the one of the reasons why we go back to this Nazi intelligence group so often is that the methodology, as indicated by the passage from Skorzeny, Hitler's commander, which, by the way, talks a great deal about Schock's post-war career. For people who'd like to follow up on that, a much briefer and watered-down version of that is also presented in Haim's American Swastika. But as indicated in that passage from Skorzeny, Hitler's commando, the methodology of the Nazis has... Well, it's very much in evidence today, and that's why it's so important to study where our intelligence system comes from, how it developed, and why it developed in the way it did. Because there's an awful lot of similarity between the kinds of things that, you know, as we've noted, the Nazis' inclinations to provocation, the Reichstag fire, the Gleiwitz incident leading to the invasion of Poland, and a bogus attempt on Hitler's life to invade, to justify aggression in the West. It's something that we've seen before with the Nazis, that we've seen before in the United States, and whether we see, as some of us have speculated about, whether we see this immediately prior to a move into Nicaragua remains to be seen.
Parallels are certainly there to be seen. People just open up their eyes. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, well, let's hope they do. Thanks for calling, Adequate. Good evening, Sunnyvale.
Hi, Dave. This is Roger. First of all, I wish Nip was there because I wanted to be on the other side of the phones. He is one of the hosts, mentioned the Mengele hoax, and I wanted to say if people are willing to believe that about a month or so after $3.5 or more million is on his head, that suddenly his bones are in Brazil, well, they should probably buy Aesop's Fables. But the point I wanted to make was on Nip's first article he read from yesterday's Mercury News. I didn't see that article. I did see one from the Times, and it may have been two different reporters doing two different views on this, and this one is almost comical. After reading the New York Times articles in the last 2 weeks on Mengele, leading up to after his bones are found and supposedly verified, they say now the hunt goes on for new people. Here's an article from yesterday's New York Times, Saturday, June 29th, and the headline is, Federal Report Finds U.S. Helped Two T-W-O Nazi War Criminals to Immigrate, which means, obviously, they couldn't find a copy of Project Paperclip. And the two paragraphs I wanted to read were this. It said the GAO, which conducted the report, said it had found, quote, no specific program, end quote, to help German Nazis who had worked with U.S. intelligence to immigrate to the U.S. Once again, non-recognition of Project Paperclip. It said in a 40-page report wrapping up a 3-year investigation into links between U.S. agencies and Nazi war criminals in the early post-war years, the accounting office did not provide the names of any of the Nazis cited, and in most cases, it also withheld as classified information the identities of the intelligence agencies involved. Congressmen and staff aides, who had been eagerly awaiting the report, indicated they were not happy with this decision to conceal the names of the individuals and agencies and would press for additional data at hearings on the report's subject matter, which are to be scheduled probably after the summer. So there's the little variance in the reporting by the two papers.
Well, and of course, again, weigh that against the thing from today's Crown Examiner, where they list the nine most wanted Nazi war criminals. We've found information that four of them certainly worked for U.S. intelligence or the Galen Organization, and or the Galen Organization. A fifth quite possibly did, and a sixth was working on behalf of Time Life, or at least selling manuscripts to Time Life. So, again, the modified limited hangout lives and is apparently alive and well.
Yeah, it is. They're pulling it right now, or trying to pull it on Mengele. Well, look, folks, it's not working with me. You know, come and get me. But, so it's just supposing he's dead, who else? And there they are. And, you know, two out of three, and it's a pretty good batting average, have all the links that we know have always been there. And so the thing that I'm enjoying at this particular point in time, after so many people like you and me and others and myself have been doing this research, it's so above ground now, it's almost comical. Now, if we can only get the general populace, the zombieized general populace who don't listen to this show and don't really pay attention to much that's important, to even notice this because it's on page one so often, maybe we'll get to first base with this stuff.
Well, let's hope so. Of course, one of the things that we try to do on these broadcasts is to try and do two things. First of all, to acquaint listeners with some of the basics of this information and, in particular, places where they can go to learn about this, because one point we try to make is that we're not some kind of gurus that are in possession of highly specialized knowledge and we're handing down revealed truth. We're talking about history, recorded history, and history which can be learned pretty readily if you know where to go. And then once you've learned it, at least some of the basics, hopefully, do what you said, Roger, and communicate to other people what those facts are, because otherwise all of our buns are going into the toaster.
Well, you know, a friend of mine called me just before I got through to you guys tonight. He had just tuned in, and he said, well, how do you know these guys are right? And I said, well, I tell you what, just speculate on this for a second. This show has been on for about 6 years now, give or take, and if in 6 years there hasn't been a government lawsuit, if the people have not been politically or legally removed, what do you think? And that's basically what I say to the audience. If after 6 years the veracity isn't there, if they haven't come and taken you guys away, well, then what is the real truth?
Well, I don't know if we're big enough to merit the Nacht und Nebel, a night and fog treatment, quite yet. I do think, though, that the credibility that we've gained from most of our listening audience in the teeth of you know, an entire lifetime, basically, of being told that things are different than the way we're presenting is one measure of our success. But beyond that, the reason why we stick almost exclusively to published information is that this stuff has cleared libel lawyers. I mean, the books, it's why we're meticulous and perhaps a little pedantic in the approach that we use. It's why we give, you know, the author, we give the title, we give the copyright date, the publisher, and so forth. Because people should understand, you know, again, where this information is coming from. It's not us saying it. That I guess, maybe is the point to make. It's not us saying it. These are things that happened, and all we're trying to do is to communicate to people where they can find out about these things. But, it ain't us, I guess, is the main message here. Stuff is out there, and, you know, stuff like American Swastika. You know, I feel a little self-conscious beating people over the head with that book, but that's a book that's on sale now. That Trading with the Enemy, In God's Name, all these other things we're talking about. That, by the way, was not an oath. That's the book which the caller referred to a few calls ago when talking about a movie. These things, the books are out there, the information's available, and even if people are too lazy to read, we've got the Radio Free America and Guns of November tapes, which are available and which we read to you. So I guess one point's out there, learn the stuff and communicate it.
That's a good point. And as with May's work, your work, and all the other good work on KKUP, KFJC, and all the other ones, all you have to do is say, oh, really? Is that really true? Well, how can I find this out? And there's always all the information in the books to back it up. And everybody should know that. Everything that's been said basically is only backed up by the truth, and the truth is there if you get off your duff and look at it.
Indeed. Get off your keister, as President Reagan would say.
Thank you, Ron. Good night.
All righty. And good evening, Fremont. Line open, 941-2500, 15 minutes left.
Good evening, Dave. How are you?
Good, thanks. Great. How you doing?
I didn't really have any hardcore information. I just wanted to bring up...
You don't? Well, you're going to be flogged at sunrise. Now, go ahead.
I know. I probably should be, but... I had one or two comments and I had a question. First comment, I was watching Eagle Burger, I guess who used to be Henry Kissinger's employee, and he was on there, and he was talking about the state-sponsored terrorism,
mm-hmm.
which he's constantly harping on. You know, that it's like a code word, state-sponsored terrorism. And the only thing I really want to bring it up is it's surprising that a person like Eagle Burger can get on, like, Donahue show or something, and nobody will ever bring up the fact that the people he works for and with, you know, talk about state-sponsored terrorism. I mean, that's like the pot calling the kettle black. That's the first thing I wanted to mention, and I thought if anybody else had seen it.
Dude, two quick points about Eagle Burger. Eagle Burger not only worked for Kissinger in the State Department, if I'm not mistaken, he's also a consultant now with an organization called Kissinger and Associates, which
mm-hmm.
is Kissinger's consulting firm, and so he has worked for Kissinger both in a governmental and a private capacity.
That guy really, really disturbs me. You know, he's just, he's a big, fat guy. He gets on there and he just seems to, like, lie constantly. You know, it's surprising that nobody ever takes him to the carpet for the things he's saying, you know, but he seems to get away with it. And without harping on that, there's another point I wanted to make about the Nicaragua thing that they just seem to be signing, where they're saying to give the conditions under which the United States can intervene militarily.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that, in the beginning it sounds, you know, the first two or three things are very specific, and it would sound like there'd be no way that you could really be drug into a war there unless it was like a really open provocation of communist aggression or whatever, right? But when you really start reading down, it really what it says is almost any time they feel like intervening, they can. It'll be almost a child's play for them to think of a reason to go in. It's just like almost like a blank check, it seems to me, for them to just intervene in Nicaragua, if you've been following that at all. Did you have any comment on that?
Well, again, my feeling has been, with regard to the terrorist incidents that we're seeing, we've hinted with regard to some of the things, like the bombing of the plane, the Indian plane off the coast of Ireland, if these things are being produced, some or all of these incidents are being produced by elements of U.S. intelligence, my feeling is that the ultimate goal, if, and I want to underscore and triple underscore the word if here, if some or all of the terrorist incidents that are provoking the reaction Mary McGrory described in the column Nip Tuck read you, if they're being done by the U.S. intelligence apparatus, then the goal, in my opinion, is not so much a move into the Middle East, but is to sort of whip up public furor, which then will ultimately be assuaged by a move into Nicaragua, much as the bombing of the Marines in Lebanon, the 007 furor, and so forth, created a very tangible bloodlust in this country, which could then be spoken of having been salved in the wargasm in Grenada. My feeling is that this is the goal for if these things are being done, then the idea is to whip up public sentiment in such a way as that they will be very favorable towards any kind of move into Nicaragua, probably not examining the pretext for that move as critically as might be called for.
I think you're right, especially if you look at the performance of some of these people, like Eagle Burger especially. His behavior is very provocative. It's amazing. It's just amazing that some of the things that these people... It's practically mind-boggling that some of these people can say this stuff and get away with it that nobody ever says. You know, it's just... To me, I can't explain my amazement when you see people like this on the television and they're talking about state-sponsored terrorism. Like, my God, I mean, these guys are totally into it, and they're blaming everybody else, you know. Like, a perfect example of that was when they found out, because I called up last week and I mentioned about the stewardess who spoke German and turned over the Jewish passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he said, well, they spoke German, so that must mean they're East German. And I said, you know, I'm thinking, what about Munich? What about all the people that we've given money to around Munich? What about all the weapons that are sent? You know, why is it they're all of a sudden East Germans just because they speak German? There's no proof of that.
Well, this is...
Man, we supported so many terrorists and coming out of Germany that it's pathetic, you know? But it's got to be immediately, it's got to be the communists if they speak German. It's got to be East Germans. I just, and nobody will argue with that. You know, it's just like, well, all right, that's okay.
Well, that's why, caller, we encourage, you know, again, not to, to beat a dead horse, but, you know, we're always telling people to tape the shows. If they're not in a position to get out and, you know, buy or borrow some of the books from the library, then at least taping some of the shows so that you can preserve some of the record. Like, say, for example, last week we reviewed the first of the programs about the Hard Rain shows about the Olympics massacre, and we'll get to some more of those hopefully in weeks to come. Taping those off the air and playing some of those, talking about, as you pointed out, the West German Nazi connections to what one of the, perhaps the most famous of the Palestinian terrorist incidents, or, for example, taping the show this evening, or getting the Radio Free America program number 3, in which the development, the origin of the Palestinian commando groups, by the, their development by Skorzeny is talked about. It's a good way to begin sort of acquainting people with this. One thing that I would caution is, you know, I detect a note of frustration in your voice as you describe that. You got to be patient with a lot of these people. You'd be amazed how many people will reject some of this stuff at first, but after a while, if you sort of walk them through it and show a little bit of patience, they will start to pick up on it. You know, it all is not lost. So I would just caution, you know, assuming that people are intelligent enough to understand the facts, and if you present the facts right, I think you'll find it works out, at least to a considerable extent.
I think you're true, and I find the one thing that is borne out, because I've called up earlier, and I think, and I've talked to you and Dave, Nip, you might recall my voice. I was the one who was at school at San Francisco that we had to study Henry Kissinger about what a statescraft he, how great he was at statescraft. I found, though, the best thing that works with people, and it is frustrating, even when you document it, the thing of it is that I think turned more people to my point of view is when Reagan went to Pittsburgh. It's never, it doesn't seem like people are ever really convinced by, you know, you can open up a book and say, this is the way it is. But when you say, well, look at these people, now the guy's going to Pittsburgh, and you can show them, that turns people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it really comes up into their face as an ongoing problem, you know, then some people, then they're not so critical, because then they've got to come face to face with the fact that these people are doing, you know, a lot of things that people probably haven't been recognized. Anyways, I won't concentrate on that real long. You probably have more people on. But, yeah, I do get somewhat frustrated. I wanted to ask you one question, though.
Okay, real quick, because we do have a couple of people hanging on.
All right, great. I'll be off quick. I just finished reading Penny LaNew's book, And Banks We Trust, and I'm reading right now Higher Form of Killing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if you could tell me who wrote California, the First Parafascist State. Do you know who wrote that?
Let me give you the first... let me give you the full title, the correct title. It's called Anti-California...
Anti-California.
Report from our first para-fascist state.
A report from...
A report from our first para-fascist state.
All right, okay, yeah.
It's authored by...
I've got it mixed up. All right.
Authored by a man named Kenneth Lamott. Last name, L-A-M-O-T-T.
L-A-M-O-T-T?
Right.
Okay, great. And I tell you, you guys are, as usual, you're doing a great job. You know, it's always been my opinion that the stuff you're talking about, excuse me, should get a lot more coverage. And I would recommend to anybody, read Penny LaNew's book. It's a really great book.
Yeah, In Banks We Trust, we'll talk not only about some of the Vatican banking connections we've talked about, but also about Nugent Hand and some of the organized crime, intelligence, narcotics links that we've talked about before and we'll be coming back to. So I'll second the listeners, the caller's recommendation, In Banks We Trust by Penny LaNew.
Great book. And I think somebody from De Anza called earlier, and I'm going to use your vehicle to say hi, people from De Anza, if it's a person I thought it was.
All righty. Well, if it's the person you thought it was, hopefully they got your message.
Great. Have a good night.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling. Stay tuned now. Good evening, San Jose.
Yeah, can I turn my stereo down real quick?
Sure. All righty. Well, are you all set?
Yeah. Dave, I was reading, my friend gave me a book, about the Rolling Stones. I'm a pretty regular listener to your show, and I have read a few of the books that you've suggested.
Mm-hmm.
But this time I was just browsing through a rock and roll book, just kind of passing the time, and I came across an article about the 1969 Rolling Stones tour, where it said that their West Coast mansion headquarters was owned by the DuPont Chemical Company, And I remembered in one of your shows that you mentioned that DuPont was fairly influential in some form of conspiracy. I can't remember exactly what they were. I was wondering maybe if you could tell me exactly what you were talking about when you were mentioning the DuPont Corporation.
Probably in connection with the American-German industrial connections that we were talking about. The DuPonts were very active on behalf of the Third Reich. They also helped sponsor fascism in this country. The DuPonts, recall, not only controlled DuPont Chemical, which had a lot of dealings with IG Farben, the DuPont family also owns a controlling interest in General Motors. And General Motors' activities on behalf of the Third Reich were another thing that in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika tape, which also is available from our tape copying service, we talk about that at some length. Also, recently we talked about the DuPonts in connection with an abortive fascist coup in the United States coming from members of the Morgan Financial and Industrial Group, and the DuPonts were capitalized, the DuPont Industries were capitalized essentially by the Morgan Bank. And we spoke about that in connection with General Smedley Butler, and even a report that General Douglas MacArthur was under consideration to head up this fascist coup. By the way, if you'd like to read up on that, caller, the paperback, Trading with the Enemy, and which is authored by Charles Heim. Right, that'll talk about that, about the DuPont Nazi connections at some length. We actually, within the last month and a half, read a good section of that book, and I suspect that that may be the broadcast you heard recently.
Yeah, well, you guys were talking about rock and roll for a while there, about Bob Marley, and
mm-hmm.
you mentioned some CIA connections with Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, on the other side of the coin, the Rolling Stones seem to do quite all right, and I don't want to knock them against anything. I'm not trying to put any facts or set my facts different or anything, but I just think that it's kind of interesting that was the Altamont tour, and that was the after Brian Jones died. So and with all the drugs I'm sure DuPont can get into, you never know.
Well, again, it one of the things that I like to use in a situation like the one you've cited, where it's an interesting, we see some names cropping up in a context which is interesting. We don't know whether there's anything substantive to it or whether it's just a coincidence. What I like to call that is food for thought and grounds for further research, and counsel you to maybe see if you could find out some more for us on that.
I'm always digging for more pieces to your jigsaw puzzle, Dave.
All righty, well, keep digging and let us know what you're able to put together.
Yeah, see you.
All righty, thanks for calling.
Bye.
And good evening, San Mateo.
Hi, I've just got a couple quick questions. I missed the first part of the show, and you mentioned, one of the callers mentioned about Mengele and it being a hoax. I was just wondering what your opinion was on that, or whether, was that a farce or what?
Okay, let me, real quick, because we do have one more person here on the line I'd like to try and get to, but I believe that essentially because the trail of Josef Mengele was not only getting hot, but because as that trail was being uncovered, it was leading to people who are in important places today, specifically through the John DeLorean case, perhaps up to people within our intelligence agencies or perhaps even in the White House. There were connections, there were names mentioned in connection with the DeLorean case from the Reagan White House, and the information being developed by Mae Brussel on her World Watchers series Sunday morning at 9, Thursday evening at 9, suggests that the Mengele's attorney, Fritz Steinacher, was handling the money for John DeLorean's proposed cocaine sale, which in turn, according to information she's received, came from Klaus Barbie. So as the Barbie DeLorean cases unraveled, they began getting close to Mengele, and of course, we presented information on this broadcast from a Freedom of Information Act document that Mengele has been an American citizen since 1933, and that the FBI's, or that the government rather, has known this since 1944. And yet no denaturalization proceedings have been begun. But I think, personally, that it's a hoax. The details on that, May is pursuing that on World Watchers. Sunday mornings at 9, Thursday evenings at 9, if you'd like to follow that in detail. What was your second question, real quick?
I was just wondering, I'll take the answer off the air, if you had any knowledge about the killing of the Marines in El Salvador.
Okay, well, let me take that question off the air, as the caller indicated, and I'll give him a couple seconds to get back to his radio, and hopefully he is back there now. I don't have any specific information other than what I've seen in the newspapers. A couple of things that I did find interesting about the killings of the Marines in El Salvador. First of all, those killings have been used by the Reagan administration to justify, as yet, as far as I know, unnamed measures to enhance the security procedures in El Salvador, which sounds like a polite word for escalation of sorts. Exactly what steps have been taken, we don't know, but the killings of the Marines have served as the justification. The credit for those killings was taken by a previously unknown guerrilla group. Perhaps that it simply is a new faction, or perhaps someone was attributing this to a guerrilla group. We don't know. I was struck by a couple of aspects of the killing itself. One, that the gunmen were dressed, at least according to some reports, in El Salvadorian military uniforms. Of course, the El Salvadorian guerrillas have penetrated the El Salvadorian military. So, at least according to reports we've seen, it would not be beyond their capabilities to do that. More suspicious in my mind was the fact that apparently a number of the federal security personnel who were on duty in this particular area were seen to have disappeared just before the killing. Now, whether the El Salvadorian guerrillas' penetration of the El Salvadorian security arrangements is such that they could have produced such a situation where most of the guards on duty were their own people, I don't know. But anyway, food for thought, grounds for further research. It'll be interesting to see if we get more information about that particular killing. And I'm going to go to the phones. Good evening, San Francisco.
Yes, picking up on your thread of thought, one of the interesting aspects of that...
Very quickly, because we're just about out of time.
Well, they followed one guy into the kitchen. They knew that he was in there, right? He wasn't, like, out front. Do you remember that piece?
I know that one. I didn't.
Yeah, there was one guy hiding in the kitchen, and instead of just taking it for granted that they had got all of them, they went into the kitchen and got this one guy, last guy. But anyway, let me get to it very quickly.
Sure.
One involved Kennedy and why he had to be removed, because I'm not really satisfied yet with the explanation.
Well, let me mention that we're right up against 11 o'clock. We're out of time.
Hey, let me hold on then, okay?
Okay, real quick, because why Kennedy was killed is a long answer that I haven't got time for.
I can hold on, and you can check off, and then I can pick it up.
Oh, okay. Do you want to talk about it off the air?
Yeah.
If you like, if I can answer something real briefly, I got 1 or 2 minutes I can probably take from the next person.
But you touched on something earlier that might help towards an explanation. The fact that Kennedy was unhappy with Dulles and their intelligence apparatus.
Okay, let me very briefly touch on the various things that, in my mind, assured Kennedy's destruction.
Well, you excuse interruption, but you point out that he was ready to pull out from Vietnam, and all the information that I've come across to date disputes that.
All right, well, listen again. We're out of time here. We went over that in great detail and at considerable length in our third Guns of November show. I don't want to go over the details now because we read excerpts from declassified Defense Department memoranda. And again, if you would like to pursue the hard facts on that, the hardest facts you're going to find were in our Guns of November Part 3. Granted, the established version of history, just like the established version of history says that there were only two Nazi war criminals assisted in working for U.S. intelligence. The official version is that Kennedy was bringing us into Vietnam. In fact, he was pulling us out of Vietnam. That's one of the reasons he was killed. He was working for detente with Russia, had achieved a nuclear test ban treaty. He was also working for normalized relations with Cuba, which ran him afoul of a number of different people there. He was reducing the oil depletion allowance and a number of other things, any one of which, in my opinion, using troops to support civil rights in the South, any one of those things, I think, might have gotten him killed. The intersection of all of those things, plus his brother's war against organized crime, his brother being Attorney General at the time, assured his destruction. And again, not to be rude or gruff about the Vietnam thing, but the Guns of November has been on about 3 times in the last year and a half, and if you'd like to pursue that, give me a call. I'll tell you where you can get the tapes. Okay?
Okay.
All righty. Well, that just about winds up. Well, let's take the one last caller. Caller, you got 30 seconds.
Okay, I wanted to respond to the guy who called earlier. He was interested about the DuPont-Morgan Smedley-Butler coup.
Uh-huh.
It was a movie that apparently is pretty obscure now, but it was loosely based on that incident made in 1964 called 7 Days in May. It has Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas in it, screenplay by Rod Serling. You can rent it in any video rental place. It's not too factual, but entertaining.
It's based on a novel of the same name by Fletcher Nebel, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, that's news to me.
Yeah, I know it's based on a novel. I think Fletcher Nebel is the author. Anyway, it talks about a scenario whereby there's an attempted military coup.
Right.
But we know that can't happen in real life.
Is that, am I correct that that's based on the DuPont?
I don't know. I don't know whether that's, whether the Smedley Butler coup served as an inspiration for that book or not.
Well, it sure was similar.
Anyway, there certainly were similar features. I'm not that familiar with the novel. I know more about the real coup, but it's something, you know, perhaps somebody can find that out in weeks to come and let us know. Anyway, we're all out of time, so we're not going to be able to talk about it anymore on this show. Okay?
Right.
Thanks for calling. All righty. And we are, as I said, all out of time, so I'm going to take that last caller off the air. You're listening to KFJC Los Altos Hills. That winds things up for me. My name is Dave Emery. For Nip Tuck, this winds up One Step Beyond, and we will be back next week at 8 o'clock sharp. Don't forget, Mabe Russell, Thursday evening at 9 o'clock if you're not watching fireworks. And that takes care of that. Enough fireworks for here again. My name is Dave Emery for Nip Tuck and the rest of the KFJC staff. I'd just like to say thanks for listening and tune in next week.
The preceding program has been a presentation of the KFJC Public Affairs Department. The views expressed on this program are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of KFJC, its staff, or management. We recognize our duty to provide equal time to responsible parties with opposing views. Write to us at KFJC Public Affairs, Foothill College, 12345 El Monte Road, Los Altos Hills, California, 94022.